Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the Stimulating Program Initiative for Retirees that Inspires Thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for SPIRIT. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors. Everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, SPIRIT continues to be a safe and ideal way for everyone to connect and learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program will be the 21st Century College Campus. Will your grandchildren be safe? Joining me in the SPIRIT Forum is my esteemed colleague, Rabbi Ilan Haber, who is the National Director of the Heshy and Harriet Seif Jewish Learning Initiative on campus, otherwise known as the OU JLIC program. He's the Director of the Next Gen Division, also for the Orthodox Union. We're so happy to welcome Rabbi Haber. So, hey, Rabbi Judy, Haber, tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you get started working with college campuses?
My time in this work actually started when I myself was in college. I actually went to Yeshiva University, and myself, along with some of my friends, used to visit in a program called Kiruv, which is run by Rabbi Barry Bender from Yeshiva University. We used to visit different college campuses, providing chizuk and trying to strengthen different communities over Shabbos. And I never thought that I would ever go into this work professionally. It was just something that I did sort of like as an extracurricular activity, but I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I guess different paths go different ways. And, you know, I started working after college for Richard Joel at Hillel. And then, you know, during Smicha, I worked also while I was doing graduate work, doing a master's in public administration at George Washington University. I was asked to be university chaplain for Jewish students while I was there. And then my wife and I, Leah, became one of the first couples for OUJLIC when the program started in the year 2000.
So please tell us a little bit more about JLIC. What is its mission and what does the organization accomplish?
Sure. So the program was created in the awareness that approximately 75 to 80% of all Orthodox day school graduates in North America are going to secular university. I think when I was at Yeshiva University, I used to have this perception that everybody was going to YU or Turo or staying in Israel, doing different things. But then actually, if you look at the data, many more students are actually going to secular universities in North America, in other places as well. And the idea is that while they're there, the OU decided, and you know, different people who were interested in this decided that they needed a framework for growth and chizuk. And so the idea is to put rabbinical couples, male and female educators that serve as sort of community leaders and supporting students. And we work in partnership with Hillel. So our couples are usually embedded within the Hillel for those campuses that have a Hillel that we work at. And we provide, you know, chizuk and Torah and support at the minyan and otherwise. Essentially, in a lot of ways, the couples function in a way that, you know, a rabbinical couple might function in a community, but specifically focused on the Jewish students. And our main sort of group that we work with are Orthodox students, but I would say roughly about 25% of all students that participate in the program are coming from non-Orthodox backgrounds. So it attracts a lot of students also more broadly. Especially as we're sort of integrated into these larger environments where there's many students and no barriers for entry. So people come and, you know, they want to learn or they want to, you know, coach a meal or they want to, you know, go over to a house of a rabbi. So many of them participate in our programs as well.
So you are doing Kiruv also while you're at it.
Yeah, it's not the main function of the program, but there's a lot of it going on. Exactly.
So when you mentioned that, a large percentage of students, college, high school seniors are choosing to go to secular campuses, why would you think that they would prefer to do that over Toro or YU?
It's a great question. And I think, you know, I'm often asked this question with regard to JLIC. Does our presence there mean that more students are going to go to secular university rather than less? For my part, the way that I've seen it is I think that people are not going to these campuses specifically because of OUJLIC, although the presence of the couple and our program, I think, is reassuring for a lot of parents and students that are going. But I believe the primary reasons, you know, are that, you know, it's part of our culture of the American society, the college experience. How this might be changed by COVID or in the future is I think, open to discussion. But, you know, many students, especially those that sort of balance Torah, Mata, and, you know, secular life with religious life, want to sort of experience what it's like to be on a secular campus. So you have students that are willing to pay as much as they would pay to go to YU, to go to some of these, or more, to go to some of these like more prestigious private universities. But also, you know, there are specific things that they might look to learn or study that YU Atturo might not have a program for. And then there's also obviously students that are commuting from home. They want to live at home. So, you know, we serve students that are going to, that are in commuter campuses also. And I think that the cost of campus is a prohibitive aspect. And so if they're able to go to state university or a local college, oftentimes that helps out, especially for a family that might be struggling with tuition for multiple family members, you know, in day school. So it provides a little bit of relief if they're able to go to a secular university. Oftentimes, I mean, the people that we work with, they're not typically choosing between YU and Harvard or YU and Yale or YU and Princeton. Or YU and Queens. They're often choosing between, you know, like a Maryland and an Illinois, or, you know, they may often be when we speak to them, for whatever reason, which I can't really fully get into necessarily, but they're often choosing between two secular universities and not even considering, you know, what the benefits of an Orthodox college might provide for them.
Okay. Before we go off to actually talk more generally about the schools, how many campuses are there, by the way, that have JLIC on them?
So we currently have a presence in 25 different campuses or communities. When I say campuses or communities, but there are places where we're serving multiple campuses with one couple, which is more of a community-based model. For example, in Toronto, you have students that are going to York University or Ryerson, or University of Toronto, but they live, many of them, in the Thornhill area or other parts of Toronto. And so we decided that in order to serve those students, it was better to sort of be embedded in their home community and then do programming on campus rather than being embedded on the campus. Although typically for those campuses, most of our residential colleges and even some of our commuter colleges, our couples are living on or near campus. So students that are living on campus and residential in a dormitory or in off-campus housing, an apartment or whatever. So they're the ones that we're typically working with, but we have sort of these multi-campus frameworks places. But right now there's 25, including two in Israel at the IDC and at Bar-Ilan University.
Mm-hmm. The question just came in off the chat. Somebody wanted to know how JLIC differs from Chabad on the campus.
So a question I typically get, thank you for asking. First of all, I think Chabad does great work. Oftentimes there are students that participate in both programs. But we do every year a survey of our students. Approximately 3,000 students participate in the survey. So it's actually quite robust. And we find that in that survey, only about 11% of those people that participate in our programming are active members of Chabad, are frequent members of Chabad. About 50% are not involved in Chabad at all. So we don't see as much overlap as I think people would assume that there is. For us, our focus is on building up the students on student leadership. For students that want sort of more of a modern Orthodox or centrist Orthodox type of role model couple where both the male and the female are working closely and providing sort of a role model aspect to the students. So often they gravitate to JLIC, or if they're looking for communities where they could be more empowered to be much more active rather than members of building community rather than receiving, like, which is the typical sort of Chabad model. But oftentimes there are students that will go to a Friday night dinner at Chabad, but they'll have a very close personal relationship with our couple, and they're getting good things from both organizations. And, you know, Kol HaKavod, in a campus with 5,000 Jewish students, it's hard to quibble why there's an extra couple there.
I know the JLIC couples are very busy wherever they are. I once had the opportunity to be at one of your staff conferences before COVID, a number of years, and I was so impressed with all that they're doing, just unbelievable. So they are busy. So I'm sure with a couple of couples on campus, everybody still has plenty to do. Okay, so we hear a lot about anti-Semitism and anti-Israel activity. I think I mentioned that JTA just had a report this morning. I haven't had a chance to read it on the college campus. So I know that the environment certainly has changed since I was in school many, many years ago. And you had said that, you know, you were in Yale 20 years ago. How are you seeing things now? I mean, we see a lot in the papers. Is it as bad as we're hearing or worse, God forbid?
So there's definitely, I would say, a greater awareness and a tendency where things that we've seen even 20 years ago are becoming more mainstream. So while there were BDS movements on campus 15, 16, 17 years ago, there were major initiatives at Rutgers and Michigan at all, really many of the major campuses across the US. Now we're seeing, I think, more traction and more mainstreaming, I guess, of sort of the perspectives that have always been in existence. I remember in my experience at Yale, the students also experienced a lot of, conflict, not, I wouldn't say direct conflict, but I could give a couple of personal anecdotes that I think will illustrate this. So oftentimes as a JLIC rabbi, I would be invited by students to come to them to different programs that were put on, and just in order to be another face in the crowd and to give chizuk and support to them. You know, many of them had questions and would ask me afterwards and to talk to them. And I remember the law school invited a member of the PFLP. This wasn't the law school itself. This was the student groups that were involved in law student society. And they invited a member of the PFLP to give a lecture. So the students invited me to come and just be a face in the crowd, so to speak. And it was so, you know, sitting there seeing a person affiliated with a terrorist organization. And I just want to remind you that this was during the Second Intifada. So the PFLP was an active terrorist organization. This was not, you know, like something where you could argue that maybe they've moved on or whatever. They had, you know, recently done things, was talking about, you know, like a lot of the same rhetoric that you hear now, anti-colonialism rhetoric, the rhetoric of social justice, whatever, coming out of the mouth of a terrorist, was very disconcerting. And one of the most disconcerting things in that experience was, I remember that you know, he invoked Martin Luther King in his talk, and a number of the students gave up and gave him a standing ovation at that point. And I remember one Jewish law student talking to another law student, asking, why did you stand up to him, for him? You know, like he's saying he represents abhorrent things, and why you? He said because he invoked the memory of Martin Luther King, I felt like the need to give him that respect. And I just want to point out that Yale Law School is probably the most academically rigorous law school in the country. It's not easy to get in there. But if you're working at that line of logic, and that's what's happening in the law school. So you can imagine many, many places around the country inviting people, excluding people in terms of speaking. And so even back then in those days at Yale, you saw different aspects of it in different ways, and there are students that felt like they had to fight against it or combat it, or, you know, felt like they had to at least, sort of process their experience of being in those types of experiences. And now I think probably the difference is that it's happening more frequently, and a lot of this is becoming more mainstreamed within the context of the university.
What do you think that the roots of anti-Semitism and anti-Israel sentiment are on campus? And what trends are you seeing?
When you talk about sort of anti-Semitic activity, I think you really need to approach it from the left and from the right, meaning that oftentimes historically, I guess, anti-Semitism in America came from, you know, white supremacists, the Ku Klux Klan, people that sort of excluded Jews in different ways from being integrated into society, with very nefarious descriptions and attacks. So on a college campus, you might have some of that, but you don't typically have, it's not like white supremacists are welcome at these universities. Like they're not particularly, if I was a white supremacist at a university, I would not necessarily be so public about it, because they're very liberal, progressive environments typically, and it's not really very open and welcoming for people with that, but it exists. It existed for many years in the university system, and it still exists today. And so there is aspects of that as well, especially even in sort of outlying communities also you see it as well. Unfortunately, the Jewish community experienced different attacks from white supremacists over the last 5 years, I would say. At the same time though, now I think you're starting to see more and more anti-Semitism from the left. A lot of it is rooted and connected to sort of anti-Israel activity as well. There's a lot of debate out there about whether anti-Israel, being anti-Israel means you're anti-Semitic. I don't happen to believe that one necessitates the other, but the way that they point out Jewish students or start excluding Jewish students the way that they sort of singularly focus on Israel in their eyes as an evil actor does point to like a broader anti-Semitic themes or tropes that you see in the general society as well. I would say that if you looked at sort of like the extent of the university, so most students are not, most students are not actively anti-Semitic, and certainly most students are not, and I think that most students are not actively anti-Israel either. But I think many of them might be passively anti-Israel, where the cultural focus and the air, the atmosphere is more and more increasingly an anti-Israel atmosphere. But for those students, they might look at Israel the same way that we might look at China or North Korea or whatever, countries that they don't necessarily have much to do with, but that if someone asked them whether they had negative attitudes towards that country, they would probably say that they did, just basically because they, get it in the air and it's part of, they never really thought much about it and they just, sort of hear certain things and that becomes that perspective on things. But there's another element where we see anti-Israel activity being much more of an active element. So there are people obviously on campus that are focused on Israel and attacking Israel and delegitimizing Israel. And then we see others that are allies of those people that are doing it. There's a phenomenon now where current in sort of progressive social justice studies, that seems to sort of see oppressed people or non-white people in a lot of cases as essentially being allies, and that the same types of oppression that you find in one society, you'll find in another society. And so you see alliances being created between different groups, even if they're not focused on Israel. So, we saw this, for example, with Black Lives Matter and their platform, accepting certain anti-Israel, anti-Zionist aspects in their official platform. Because the idea is that, that there is similarities between what's happening in America, what's happening in society in America, and what's happening in Israel. And the Palestinians and others, Arabs and Muslims and just, their own, Jewish students often, even unfortunately, have built these alliances across different groups. It brings in people that might not be focused on Israel into an anti-Israel focus. And that I think started many, many years ago, but it's become much more of a thing nowadays as well.
So Orthodox college students, you know, they're there on the campus. Are they, how much are they feeling this, and how is this affecting their experience? Are they still able to have a positive college experience? You know, yeah, as parents and grandparents listening to this, it's very frightening to think about our kids on these campuses and, you know, what they're, feeling.
So I want to differentiate between, like, so all of what I just said, I know it sounds scary, and there's a lot of stuff in the press that comes out that's very, very scary. But I think that you're typically going to hear the more sensationalist or scary things in the press and less about sort of what normal life is. So I think the normal life of an Orthodox student is still pretty similar to the way it was, you know, for many, many years on a secular college campus, meaning that it's part of the atmosphere and it's part of the way of life, you know, like to see, you know, at some point on the quad an anti-Israel protest or an apartheid week or something, or to have some aspect come out, or to hear certain things in their classes, or, you know, like that's part of it. But I don't think it typically affects their day-to-day life. And thank God, at least to this point, and hopefully it should continue into the future, we haven't seen physical attacks where, like a lot of these things are, you know, I'm not saying there isn't bullying going on, but a lot of these things are verbal. A lot of these things are, protests, things along those lines, or, you know, vandalization, graffiti, stuff along those lines as well. But thankfully, people haven't been physically attacked. So I think it has increased the anxiety of the Orthodox student population. And I guess anxiety and all these things are part of their sense of safety. But thankfully, I don't think there hasn't been a point where people have been hurt or worse in these kind of contexts.
Thank God. Now, are there organizations that are addressing anti-Semitism and anti-Israeli activity on campus? That's one part of the question. OU JLIC's relationship to it as well. And my other question is, are any of the campuses trying to educate the other students? That's, you know, what you keep hearing, all this rhetoric, it's not accurate, you know, that there's just a whole different story. Is anybody really trying that? And would that be, have any effect, do you think?
Yeah, so the good news, I think, I'll talk about the sort of good news, bad news. So the good news is that there actually are a lot of organizations, a lot of people focused on this, trying to help Jewish students, give them recourse. I know that Hillel has recently done things. There are ways for students to report anti-Semitic or anti-Israel incidents. There are people that are willing to kind of help them sort of advocate them, you know, for them on to the university. There's groups like APAC or Stand With Us or CAMRA or other things that provide leadership opportunities for students and, you know, helps them organize more pro-Israel activity on campus. And these groups are growing. There's a lot of, I think, philanthropic dollars going into this because of the concern, because of the worry and anxiety, I think, in the general society about this. As it should, I think there is what to worry about. So thankfully, there is a lot of support going into Jewish students to help them feel pride, to help them explain themselves, to have them advocate for themselves and their needs. And also, I think a lot of the time, what I would say is that it's this, in this really capacity, the JLIC sort of stands apart from a number of those different organizations. So what do I mean by this? So most of these organizations are focused on the ideas or focused on the issues, right? They're combating BDS, they're combating anti-Israel activity, they're combating, you know, like a bias in the media or whatever it happens to be. And students are essentially, I've heard one person describe soldiers in that fight, right? They recruit students to help them put across their ideas or perspectives or values on campus. The way that JLIC sees it is that we're there first for the students and second for the cause, meaning that our role is to be there for supporting of the students. you know, we are unabashedly pro-Israel, unabashedly have Jewish values, and we'll say that to anybody. But our perspective, our focus is on the students' well-being. So the way I say it is that, like, you know, behind the scenes, it might be the two students that are running the anti-BDS campaign, you know, in the student union, are, you know, on the couch of the couple of the of our JLIC rabbi and Rebbetzin, you know, crying and explaining and talking about the difficulty, you know, at night. Meaning that our purpose or our value there is, I think, to really be there as a support system to provide chizuk and support for those students. So our couples are involved in these, you know, campaigns and programs and whatever, but they're doing it with the focus of helping the students feel heard, helping the students feel supported and safe, and helping them, you know, develop the confidence to be able to play those roles, rather than the focus on the combating BDS, combating these things. Unfortunately, I think the bad news is that I myself, and, you know, others can argue, are skeptical in terms of what actually can be accomplished with the, you know, in terms of changing the tenor on campus. I don't think see things getting better. Of course, you know, there are trends in thought and trends in society, and it could always swing back into a direction that I think would be of value to us. And any encounter that helps people broaden their mind, their perspective, itself has value. I'm not saying that it doesn't, but to try to change the entire, you know, like industry of thought that's pervasive on these campuses is a very tall order, and I don't think much can be done personally about it. I just hope at some point there's some internal pushback about some of the hypocrisies that you see involved. You know, the notion that you know, like, of lumping Jews into some sort of oppressive group is itself one of those hypocrisies, I think, you know, considering our very recent history with the Holocaust, and it's pretty terrible. And you saw some of that, for example, like in England, where some of this was much more overt, you know, like with the last, you know, election that occurred there. So there is some value to pushing, but I'm not sure whether you can change the hearts and minds of non-Jewish students, or even Jewish students that themselves are fully immersed in this world. You know, I think that the thing that has the best opportunity are trips, like, so Birthright and other types of trips that people take. I know that APAC, for many years, I'm assuming they still do, take non-Jewish campus leaders specifically to Israel to see what's there. Any kind of exposure that helps sort of move people beyond the tropes and the sound bites into a more complex engagement with Israel and understanding it, and an empathy with it, I think would be helpful. But that itself is painstaking work, and it's done person by person. It's very hard to do that across the entire society.
Now, a question came in. What about the fact, moving away from the students, I think what's more of concern to a lot of people are the professors' unions that pass resolutions against Israel, and how does the administration of the colleges deal with, you know, act on these threats?
So, I mean, thankfully, a lot of the time, I mean, there's a lot of things that's been in the press also, right? The CUNY, the union, the teachers and union for CUNY voted pretty abhorrent statement recently that it voted in. What that has to do with pensions and, you know, rights of professors is really beyond me. I think it was an abuse of the union's role in that regard. And there are a number of people that have dropped out of the union because of it or pushed back on it. A lot of the times those views are largely symbolic, meaning that they don't have any sort of practical ramifications. Meaning if you're in a campus and the student union votes to divest from Israel, which has happened unfortunately a number of times, the university is not beholden to that. And thankfully, the presidents and the leadership of these universities have stuck to that, meaning none of them have really, you know, moved in that direction of divestment. But I do think that there's something, I think, more nefarious here, which is the experience of a student in class. You know, like, a student does not have a lot of power being a student. And so if a teacher or professor teacher's aide says things that are particularly like challenging or difficult for a student, they don't have much recourse. And we have not seen, I think, to my mind, the university is doing enough to protect students from those kinds of experiences, or to recognize that students feel at times, like marginalized or oppressed in that kind of way. So I think that there's a lot more that could be done in terms of spreading awareness, at least on the university administration side, so that they're able to do more. In certain cases, which is really, I think, pretty a minority of cases, they fired professors for things that they've posted on social media or for things that they've said in class, but that's not the norm.
Uh-huh. Okay, moving away a little bit from some of the anti-Semitism and some of those issues, what other, dangers, challenges exist for an Orthodox student on a secular college campus? And do you think things have changed over time with your experience in JLIC?
So I think that to me, the biggest challenge for Jewish students coming to campus is there's obviously, you talk about the campus as a marketplace for ideas. I think it's less of a marketplace now than it used to be. There's a much more of currents, trends, things. So I think Jewish students always encountered in classes things that might be antithetical to Jewish values or antithetical to their upbringing, or things that might challenge, right? You know, for many years I've heard, challenges towards the veracity of the Bible and, biblical criticism and, all sorts of different things that might provide a challenge to the faith or thought of a Jewish student. I think that that environment and where academia seems to be going, I think it's pushing more in directions. I think that this itself is a issue. If a student feels like, support of Israel is support of a colonial state, so it provides certain like challenges for them in terms of their own faith and their own connection to Judaism. But I think that certainly there's, even just taking Israel out of the equation, there are many things that they'll encounter. Also socially, right? There's pressure to be involved in activities that are not your sort of your typical, promiscuity or other types of activities that they may, be encouraged or, have opportunities for. So those challenges have existed, will exist and will continue to exist for any Jewish student. I don't see them getting better. I don't think things have improved in that regard. If anything, I think things have become more challenging. To me, I think the question is how prepared are the students when they get there to encounter those challenges? And I think that's the crux, meaning that for many of these students, it's really the college is the time period, or has been traditionally, where students make the transition from children into adults. Right, where they're supposed to be becoming essentially from people that sort of like more recipients of things to people that are more proactive, that determine their own destiny and their own identity and values. That happens obviously to some extent in high school, but college is a major aspect or point for that. Some students come to campus and they're not very prepared, or they themselves are ambivalent about their own Jewish identity. I think that if you talk to different day schools about what their students are doing, I don't think you'd find uniformity in terms of Jewish observance of mitzvot and values, even in terms at a high school level. So students are engaging in this, even different types of activities, and many oftentimes their parents are as well, right? So if their family ate out dairy in non-kosher restaurants, so when they come to campus, they're not going to be on the kosher meal plan, and they'll often just make do with dairy in the dormitory cafeteria. Did something change or happen to them on campus? No, they're essentially living out the values and the life that they got from their home on campus. or things that they've already been involved in high school on campus. But I think that the more that a student is prepared, has internalized their own values, and is prepared to make choices that are Jewish, the better off they'll be when they get to campus. So if Jewish Torah values are something they're not just wearing or doing because they were expected to do it by their teachers or rabbeim or parents or family or whatever, but it's something that really became internalized, a part of who they are. So oftentimes, even with challenges, even with things that they're facing, they'll make decisions that are based on those values, that are based on those decisions. And I see many, many students making those decisions. And when they do that, when they make proactive decisions in that regard, they could become stronger, they could grow, they could deepen their Jewish values, because it becomes something that they have to compromise in order to be able to maintain, right? They're not going to class on Rosh Hashanah. They're not going to a study group, you know, on Shabbos. They're not doing certain things that sort of set them apart from others, but that help them recognize that this is really important to me. It's important to be Shomer Shabbos. It's important to be Shomer Yom Tov. It's important for me to have an atmosphere. It's important for me to live this way. And the more that they strengthen themselves in that regard, the better off they are. So there are people, I think, that, you know, leave their Judaism behind on campus. Some of those people, like I said, have left their Judaism behind to some extent even before they got to campus, and now they're just playing that out. And there are people, I think, that strengthen their Judaism on campus also. The issue, I think, is it's very hard to determine in advance who's going to do what, right? It's very hard to predict that if you have a child, a grandchild that's going to a secular college campus with all these challenges, that they're going to be one of those that's remained strong and true to who they are and true to their values and true to their Judaism, or whether they're not. And I think that it's particularly challenging for families that expect a certain adherence to Jewish values and Torah and mitzvot when their kids or grandkids go to campus and they're not doing that. So obviously, I don't think it's a panacea, because I know people that have gone off the Derech at YU also. But I think that providing a Jewish environment for school mitigates some of those challenges and enables people to grow in a more supportive environment sometimes than you sometimes find in a secular college. But we're there to try to do whatever we can to provide that supportive environment or framework to help students who make those active choices to grow and develop into Jewish adults.
Going back on what you just said, in preparation for going to a secular college, what could the day schools and parents and grandparents and families do that, let's say, maybe they're not doing now? Is there more that could be done to prepare a student for what they're, you know, somebody who's been in a very secure and protected environment when they're going out into, I can't say the college life is the real world, but the next step, what could they do to prepare them so that they wouldn't have so many problems or so many challenges?
So first of all, I think that it's important to take religious considerations into account when you're making college decisions. I know that oftentimes people will look at, okay, these are the SAT scores, these are my grades, these are where my peers are going, these are like different types of opportunities that present themselves, this is what I want to study. So those are all important things to take into account. Saying, okay, where am I going to get kosher food? Where am I going to have a community environment or framework that's supportive? Is there a JLIC couple on that campus? Is there a Chabad on that campus? Is there a Hillel on that campus? Like just trying to take more religious considerations into account as you're making decisions, I think is important. And I think the schools can do a better job of communicating that to students. I'll tell you something, this is probably controversial, but I haven't gotten any pushback from it. So the high schools often send their rabbeim to Israel to look at different gap year and yeshiva seminary programs to determine, help their students see, you know, which is going to be a better environment or which is better for different places. So they'll come and they'll visit Israel. I don't know, there aren't many day school mechanchim that are going to campuses and doing the same thing. And I said this to a group of principals. I said to them, There's really very little marginal difference between the gap year programs and seminary, you know, these Shavuot seminaries, right? The students are going to do well if they're going to this one and that one, and there might be a little minor difference, or one might be a little warmer, or one might be a little more intellectual or whatever. But there are major, major differences where your students are going to college or university, and you're not familiar enough with what's there to help them guide them and help them understand who they are and where they're going to be and where they're going to thrive Jewishly. And I think that the high schools need to do a better job of helping parents and students who are making college choices understand that religious considerations isn't the last thing you look at, but it should be the first thing you look at. Whether you're looking at YU, Turo, different places. Increasingly, the reason why we have two programs in Israel is more and more students are choosing to stay in Israel after their gap year program and go to school there. Looking at one of those programs, looking at a campus with a JLIC couple rather than a program that doesn't have that or that at least has a minyan and a kosher food and a supportive, Orthodox community. There are all sorts of different standards that exist out there. I think those are things that people have to take very seriously. And I would strongly recommend that every parent and student spend the Shabbat on the campus. If they're going to think about going there, they should see what it's like and take the time to make a personal visit and actually experience a weekend on campus so that they understand what the community is like and what they're getting themselves into. And also, I think fundamentally, they need to think about what they themselves are capable of. I think that's, some people need a more supportive environment, need a more learning environment, need more of a Jewish environment than a Jewish university. And some people are more prepared or are more capable. And I think that people being true to themselves, understanding where they are in their own maturity, where they are in their own sense of growth, whether they're going to be leaders on campus and make a Kiddush Hashem and be involved in community and be the gabbai and be the ones running the minyan and, whether this is their personality or whether they're more likely to get lost, they probably should not be going to those universities if that's the case. If a true understanding of Cheshbon HaNefesh determines that for them, they should be thinking about other options.
Now, when students do a gap year, as many of them do, and then they go from there, from the gap year to a secular program. Do you think that that's a shock to their system? They've been immersed in one system and then the other, or it has given them more, it's strengthened them to be able to handle it? Which would you say, or a combination thereof?
So I'll start from sort of the basic level. The older you are when you get to campus, the better off you are. Meaning the more mature you are, the more that you're able to resist, you have impulse control, right? We know that, for example, like young drivers have higher insurance premiums than older drivers, right? Because there's more tendency towards impulsive action or dangerous activity, right? So that exists also among students, children who are going to different places. So if they're going to go to college at 19 or 20, they're more likely to be prepared just from that standpoint of being more mature than they are if going at the age of 17 or 18. So that's one. But two, I think that there's a lot that they could gain, obviously, from the yeshiva, from the seminary environment. They're not as cloistered as people sort of describe them. Back in my day, couldn't even call except for using a payphone to reach our parents. Now, obviously, with cell phones and with a lot of, out there, people are still streaming Netflix and doing whatever, even while they're on in the Yeshivotan seminaries. I think it provides a major educational challenge for those Yeshivotan seminaries to provide a real framework. So they're not so cloistered when they're going to these places. But a lot of them, I think, end up becoming strengthened. And some of these places help them. Many of these places help them understand that Jewish values mean something to them, that something that they're going to fight for, something that they're going to make choices based on. And that's, I think, an important. I would recommend everybody spend a gap year in one of these places if they can, if they can afford it or otherwise, because of the reasons that I mentioned.
Okay. Now, with all this, the things going on, sometimes kids get to school, you know, and obviously they will become less religious. And then you also indicated that there are students coming on that have been Makariv and they've been brought closer. Which is, are you seeing one trend more than another?
So like I said, it's very hard to really figure this out because you don't really know how religious they were when they got there, right? I'll give you an example, right? So I visited a campus, I'm not gonna mention the name of the campus, in the fall, right? And I was speaking to, it's actually in September. So it was, I think, the second weekend of the campus being in session. And I was speaking to a first year student who had just came back from a gap year experience. And they said that they're, you know, that basically in the course of the conversation, it became clear that they're not Shomer Shabbos. So, you know, like if a person in the first week is already not Shomer Shabbos, so they were not Shomer Shabbos before they came to campus. It wasn't like that something transformed automatically when they got to campus and became not Shomer Shabbos. So there are many students, I think, that are like that, that have already made decisions or are looking forward to the campus as a time where they can sort of explore other aspects of themselves or, you know, separate themselves from or experiment or do different things or simply just do what they've been doing in a more private way in yeshiva or seminary in a more public way. So it's hard to sort of separate those out from those that are actually becoming influenced by their environment in a negative way and, you know, making decisions to not become from while on campus. I know that there's a lot of people that ask this question and I don't have actual statistics where I could tell you that this is the case versus that the case. But there are definitely students, large numbers of students that are in all these categories. There are large numbers of students that have come to campus with the decision that they don't want to be involved in Jewish life. There are large numbers of students that have come to campus and get strengthened by their experience on campus. And there are large numbers of those that, you know, specifically, you know, are just maintain their level of religiosity on campus. Where the different buckets fall and how that sort of expresses itself, it's hard to know. But the way that I kind of see it is that it's like a train station. You see people going in different directions, right? So, and on campus also, it's where they're starting to think about who they are, who they want to be as adults, you know, making decisions on that basis, and people are going in different directions. There are many people becoming newly Orthodox on campus. Like I said, we don't focus on Kiruv, but there are a lot of, you know, oftentimes the strength of the minyan on these campuses come from students that grew up in conservative or reform or unaffiliated homes that just noticed the minyan and walked in and, or became close to students in the Orthodox community and, you know, decided that that's who they want to be and that's what they want. So there are all sorts of opportunities and all sorts of ways for people to become connected. Some choose to take advantage of them, some don't. And what our job is, there's to stack the odds in the favor of trying to provide a supportive environment for those, to provide a lifeline for those that are choosing to separate themselves so that they have somebody that cares about them and reaches out to them, and to be there to help make sure that those that are making those active choices feel really, truly supported, are encouraged, give chizuk, have opportunities to learn, have opportunities to express themselves and develop their leadership capabilities, develop a sense of connection to community and the like.
Well, I think you've given us some wonderful thoughts, strategies, things to bring home as we get together with our families and we see our grandchildren learning to take those next steps where, you know, what would be the best thing for them. Are there any more questions that anyone wants to put in the chat before we close out the program? Oh, does the OU publish a list of college campuses that have the couples? Yes, so you go to the, what is the JLIC website?
OUJLIC.org. If you just type in OUJLIC into Google, it'll come up probably as the first thing.
And somebody else had asked, okay, so you said there are 25 campuses. Is there any thought to increase that or right now that's where that's holding?
Yeah, I mean, we do our work and we expand on the basis of fundraising, of donor support. Oftentimes parents contribute or others.
Or grandparents could also, I'm
grandparents
sure.
do also, yes. And so, you know, we're actively looking. There are communities, there are parents, that students at different places and others that are that want a JLIC program on campuses that their kids or grandkids are thinking about going to, or that, you know, like we want to expand our resources and support on the campuses that we're already at. And so we are actually in a mode where if we could raise the funds, we are looking to expand into our places that we believe fit our mission that we're not currently at, that we're hoping to be at in the future.
We hope we'll be seeing more campuses opening up. I can say that I've had various professional relationships with some of the couples when they've already come off and gone into other positions, and they are doing amazing things in the Jewish community. It's just so impressive. One second, there's another comment. No, that's nothing that would be appropriate. Anyway, I want to thank you so much, Rabbi Haber. Rabbi Haber, by the way, has been, I'm not sure what time zone you are actually. We know that you're in LA right now. You just came from Israel. I'm not sure where you're feeling. You're probably, I hope that you actually get a nap later today.
I think I'm still hovering somewhere over the Atlantic, actually. Hopefully at some point I'll move my way west and then back east.
Well, we appreciate you taking your time out to speak with us and hope you have lots of hatzlacha in your travels. And I hope to see you one day soon at 11 Broadway when we're all back there.
Thank you, Judy. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to this group. Yeah.
So we all appreciate it. So I just want to let everybody know, next week we will not be having a spirit program. For those of us in the United States, it's Election Day, and we all should be going out there. The OU will never tell you who to vote for, just to vote. So we'll be back. We'll have more information about our program in a couple of weeks, and just watch your emails. Thank you so much, Rabbi Haber. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Be healthy, be safe, have a great week.